With heads held high, Julia and Harold walked quickly forward towards the throne. The king regarded them both and grinned sardonically.
Thank you, Asha. You may leave.
Of course, sire.
King John studied Harold and Julia a while in silence. Harold stared calmly back, while Julia shifted impatiently from foot to foot, her hand never far from the pommel of her sword. The king had made a decision about them. She could see it in his face.
You two aren't getting on at all, are you?
Early days yet, father.
Princess Julia, how can anyone cause so much trouble in so short a time?
Practice. What have I done wrong now?
According to the latest report, you've been organizing the castle women, everyone from the scullery maids to the ladies-in-waiting, into a last-ditch militia. This has apparently included drilling them in swordsmanship, archery, and dirty tricks, such as where best to kick a man when he's down, and how to smear your sword blade with fresh dung so that any wound they make will fester.
That's right. Some of my ladies are shaping up rather well.
That is not the point. Women don't fight.
Not nearly enough. You're right. Why is that?
Because they're not suited to it, that's why.
Oh, is that right? Want to strap on a sword and go a few rounds with me? I'll give you a 2-point lead and still beat you 3 out of 5.
I will do no such... Harold, what are you grinning at? I suppose you've been supporting her in all this.
Certainly not, father. I hadn't heard about this latest venture, but I really don't see the harm in it. If and when the demons decide to storm this castle, we're going to need all the defenders we can muster. I don't care if there's a man or a woman guarding my back as long as they know how to use a sword.
Hmm.
What?
Oh, just every now and again, you have moments of sanity. Not often, I'll admit, but it's a rather encouraging sign.
I am also told, Princess Julia, that when my guards quite properly tried to break up your latest training session, you and your ladies drove them off at sword point. Is this true?
Pretty much. Serve them right for interfering. It wasn't any of their business. And what's more, half your guards turned out to be really lousy swordsmen. They should have stayed and watched. They might have learned something.
I don't know why I waste my time arguing with you. You have no sense of the fitness of things.
None at all. Can I go now?
No, you can't. You're here to discuss your forthcoming marriage to Harold.
I'm not marrying him.
We've been through this before, Julia. You don't have a choice in the matter. 22 years ago, your father and I signed a peace treaty to end the border war between our two countries. Part of that treaty was an arranged marriage between my eldest son and the Duke's youngest daughter, if and when this daughter should come of age. You are now of age, Julia, and the marriage will take place as planned. I will not risk another war because of your stubbornness. The postponements are at an end, Julia. I have spoken to the castle chaplain, and the wedding will finally take place 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks?
Julia shot a furious glance at Harold, but he seemed just as surprised as she was.
2 weeks.
Wait, last I heard, father, you'd put it off until next month. Why all the rush?
Yes. What's happened?
Your father, Julia.
My... Oh!
I received a communication from him. From what I can gather, he wasn't at all surprised to learn you survived your encounter with the dragon. Now that he knows you've arrived here safe and sound, he states quite clearly that it is his wish that your marriage to Harold should take place as soon as possible. In fact, he was most insistent. Vague threats of invasion and war hovered in between every line.
Right. That sounds like Dad. Once he's made his mind up about something, he won't budge an inch, come hell or high water. Damn him!
He wouldn't really go to war, would he?
Oh, yes. If he thought he was being insulted, he'd fight to the last drop of everybody else's blood.
She stared grimly at the king, her hands curling into fists that trembled impotently at her sides.
It seems you were right after all, Your Majesty. I don't have any choice in the matter.
The king looked away, unable to meet her accusing eyes. Harold reached out as though to comfort her, but drew back his hand when she turned her glare on him.
I take it my father won't be attending the wedding himself?
No. Apparently he's very busy just at the moment, and with travel as hazardous as it is. He did send you his love.
No, he didn't.
King John and Harold looked at each other, and for a long time, nobody said anything.
Come with me, both of you. There's something I want you to see.
Where are we?
We're not going far. Follow me.
He led the way to the rear of the court. Next to the door leading to the king's private chambers hung a huge, faded tapestry.
What, this old thing? It was a gift from one of the Landsgraves over 300 years ago. Pretty shabby one, but it was put up
to... I don't care about the tapestry. Behind it!
King John pulled at a concealed rope, and the tapestry slid jerkily to one side, revealing a hidden alcove, in which stood a simple glass display case, some 7 feet tall and 6 wide. Beyond the dusty, fly-specked glass stood 2 wooden mannequins, each displaying an ancient and intricately stitched wedding outfit.
Splendid, aren't they? These are your wedding robes, my children. For 900 years and more, it has been the tradition of this family that the firstborn son and his bride shall wear these robes at their wedding. Your mother and I were married in them, Harold. There's no call to look at them like that, Julia. They're a great deal more comfortable than they appear.
Julia studied the 2 outfits skeptically. The groom's robe was a dark, somber affair in black and gray, relieved only by a few silver buttons. The bride, on the other hand, was to appear in a light, frothy concoction of laces and silks, all in purest white. Julia glanced at Harold and then shook her head solemnly.
I don't think much of yours, Harold. White just isn't your color.
That's your gown, Julia.
I can't wear that! There's nowhere to hang my sword! And anyway, why does it have to be white?
It stands for purity and wholesomeness of the bride.
Aha! Do you have it in any other colors?
Harold, is something amusing you? No? I'm glad to hear it. Because I want to make something clear to you, and I want your full attention. From now on, there is to be no more quarreling with the Princess Julia in any public place.
Don't you think you should be saying that to her?
Be quiet! Now, Harold, I want you to do something for me. I want you to go down to the dungeons, find the dungeon master, and ask him to show you the cells directly under the moat. They are damp, dark, not a little cramped, and the smell is appalling. They are also apparently infested with a kind of fungus that eats insects and small rodents, and would no doubt love the chance for a crack at a human prisoner. When you've had a good look, go away and think about them. Because if you and Julia raise your voices again in front of the court, I swear by blood and stone, I'll have you both locked up in one of those cells and not let you out again till your wedding day! Now one more word from you, Harold! Now go!
Harold looked thoughtfully at his father, quickly decided that this was one time when discretion definitely was the better part of valor, and left the court with as much dignity as he could muster, which wasn't a lot. King John waited until the doors had closed behind Harold, and then turned to stare steadily at Julia.
You don't think much of Harold, do you?
I'm sure he must have his good points.
He's a pain in the backside. Oh, don't try to whitewash him to me, girl. I've known him a lot longer than you. Underneath that spoiled brat image he so studiously cultivates for the courtiers, Harold is what I raised him to be. Hard, ruthless, and self-sufficient. In other words, perfect material for a man who will one day be king. Rupert, on the other hand, takes after his mother too much. Thinks with his heart more than his head. I've always done my best as king, but I was never really cut out for the job. No more is Rupert. But Harold, he could be the best chance this country's got to get back on its feet again. Even after we've thrown back the long night, the forest land will never be what it was before. Too much has happened. The barons have tasted power, and they'll not willingly give it up. Things will probably hang together for a while out of sheer inertia. But whoever succeeds me to the throne will have to be ruthless, determined, and much more of a diplomat than I ever was. Where I once commanded loyalty, Harold will have to fight and bargain for it. He should do well enough at that. He's always shown a natural talent for deceit and double-dealing. But he's never made friends easily, and he's going to need people he can trust at his side if he's to hang on to the throne. Especially if he has to fight a civil war to keep it. Harold has the makings of a great king, but he'll always need someone beside him to be his conscience, to temper his justice with mercy, to teach him compassion. Someone he cares for and respects. You'll make a good queen to his king, Julia.
I don't want to be queen.
Nonsense.
I don't love Harold.
You don't have to. In a royal marriage, duty is more important than love. And don't frown like that, as though duty were an ugly word. It is, but we can't escape it. Just by being born into royalty, you and I took on responsibilities along with our privileges. We get the best of everything because we have the hardest work to do. We live in luxury because we give up everything else that matters. We weigh ourselves down with duty so that others can be free. And unlike any other job, we can't walk away if the work gets too hard and we don't want to do it. You're a strange lass, Julia, and sometimes I don't understand you at all. But in many ways, you remind me of Rupert. You're honest and you're loyal and you'll fight to the death for something you believe in. That's a rare combination these days. There are a great many pressing reasons for this marriage to take place, but as far as I'm concerned, there's only one that really matters. The forest land needs you. So you see, my dear, I don't have a choice in the matter either. What you or I want is no longer important. We must both do what we have to. The contract has been signed, and the marriage will take place 2 weeks from today, even if you have to be dragged to the altar by armed guards.
Julia stared at the white, frothy wedding dress, her eyes cold and hard.
Can I go now, sire?
Rupert isn't coming back.
Yes, I know. You sent him to his death.
I had to. That was my duty.
Out in the antechamber, Harold glared coldly at Sir Blaise.
Yes, I know I'm late for your little gathering, Landsgrave. My father insisted on seeing me.
Of course, Prince Harold. I quite understand. Unfortunately, the gathering of friends you insisted on has been underway for well over an hour. And if the promised guest of honor doesn't make his appearance soon, I fear the party may be over before it's even properly begun. These people need to see you just as much as you need to see them, sire.
I'll be along in a while.
It would be better if you were to accompany me now, Harold.
Better? Better for whom?
Why, better for all of us, of course. We're all in this together, Prince Harold.
I'll be there.
You'd better be.
Sir Blaise, that sounded almost like a threat.
Think of it more as a friendly warning.
Like the warning Sir Bedivere so nearly gave my father not an hour ago? If those farmers hadn't been there, that bloody berserker of yours would have killed him.
A regrettable incident.
Harold let his hand drop to the pommel of his sword.
Is that all you've got to say about it?
I'll deal with Bedivere later.
That's not good enough.
I'd hate to see our alliance fall apart, sire. Especially after we've all invested so much time and effort in it. Right now, there are a great many people waiting to meet you, Prince Harold. All of them gathered together in one place at your request, at no little inconvenience and danger to themselves. I therefore strongly suggest that you don't keep them waiting any longer. This way, sire. Harold?
You seem to be forgetting which of us is in charge.
No, I haven't forgotten.
Without me, everything we've discussed comes to nothing.
Precisely. You need us, Harold, and you've come too far to back out now. My fellow Landsgraves and I can always leave this castle and return to our masters. Sooner or later, the king's forces will become so thinly spread they'll be unable to defend him. And when that happens, the barons will just move in and take over. They won't need your help, and they certainly won't need you as king. Of course, if we have to wait that long, much of the forest land will have been destroyed by the demons. And you can be sure that when we finally storm the castle, you and your father will not be given the option of exile. Do I make myself clear, Harold?
Yes, very clear.
Good. Work with us and we'll make you king. Certainly the barons would prefer it that way. They can see a great many uses for a constitutional monarch.
You mean a figurehead?
Yes, Harold, that's exactly what I mean. Now, I think we wasted enough time on unnecessary discussion, don't you? It's time to go. Your guests are waiting to greet you.
Harold's shoulders seemed to slump a little, and he looked away, unable to face the open disdain in Blaise's eyes.
Very well, Landsgrave. It seems I have no choice in the matter.
Oh! That royal father of yours.
Ah, Julia, I'd like a word with you, if I may.
Oh, fine. Suit yourself.
She folded her arms and leaned back against the bare-paneled wall, frowning at nothing. Harold turned back to Sir Blaise.
I will join you at the party in 5 minutes. I give you my word on it.
Of course, sire. I understand. Please accept my congratulations on your imminent wedding. I shall speak with you further at the party in a few minutes.
Harold looked at Julia and frowned worriedly. Her head was bowed, and her eyes stared blindly down in quiet desperation. There was a simple, tired, defeated look to her that touched Harold strangely. In all the time he'd known Julia, he'd never once known her to give in to anybody or anything. But now all the strength seemed to have gone out of her, until she had nothing left with which to hold the hostile world at bay. He moved forward to stand beside her.
Julia, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Something's wrong, I can tell.
Wrong? What could be wrong? In 2 weeks' time, I'm marrying a man who's going to be king.
He was surprised how much not losing her mattered to him.
Julia, things will be different between us after we're married. You'll see. I know how much Rupert meant to you, but you'll get over him. Whatever happened, I'm sure he died bravely and honorably. As soon as this business with the Darkwood is over, we'll take a troop of guards and search the forest until we find out what did happen to him. And then, together, we'll take a vengeance the forest will never forget.
Thanks. I'd like that.
He is dead, Julia.
Yes, he is. I've known that for ages, but I could never quite bring myself to believe it. I didn't want to believe it. For a long time, I kept hoping. But there's no hope. Not after all this time. No hope. I should have gone with him, Harold. I should have gone with him.
Oh, Julia.
Harold took her in his arms. She tensed and then relaxed against him, her head resting on his shoulder.
If you'd gone with him, the odds are you'd have been killed as well. He knew that. That's why he made you stay behind.
I know that. It doesn't help. I wasn't there to stand by his side, and now he's dead. Rupert's dead. Every time I think that, it's like someone hit me in the gut. It hurts, Harold.
I know, Julia, but you'll get over it once we're married.
It was the wrong thing to say, and Harold knew that the moment he said it. Julia stiffened in his arms, and when she lifted her head to look at him, her face was cold and unyielding. Harold let her go and stepped back a pace. He searched for something else to say, something that would bring back the closeness they'd felt, but the moment had passed. Harold shrugged mentally. There'd be other times.
What did Sir Blaise want?
He was reminding me I'd agreed to attend a party of his. I really ought to be getting along. I'm late as it is.
A party? Why didn't I get an invitation?
Oh? I thought you had a woman's army to train.
And I thought you had a dungeon to visit.
Touché, my dear. The dungeons under the moat are something of a family joke. Father's been threatening me with them for as long as I can remember. The more upset he gets, the more he dwells on their gruesome details. I suppose there are still cells of some kind under the moat, but nobody's used them for centuries. Our dungeon's a little more than holding cells. Once the prisoners have been to trial, we send them out to work off their sentences on the farms. Why waste manpower?
What happens when they run away?
Oh, they can't. The court magician puts a compulsion on them before they leave.
Really? Oh, never mind that. About this party.
You don't really want to go, do you? You wouldn't enjoy it, you know.
No, I don't know. Who's going to be at this party?
Oh, the Landsgraves, some high society, a sprinkling of others. I'm not too sure myself. Trust me, Julia, you wouldn't enjoy it. And anyway, this is one party where admittance is most definitely by invitation only. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must be going. I'll talk with you some more later, I promise.
And with that, he hurried out of the antechamber before she could ask him anything else. Julia glared at his retreating back. Just for that, she would go to his damn party. And heaven help anyone who tried to keep her out. She frowned thoughtfully. A party the size this one would have to be couldn't easily be hidden away. Somewhere, there was a servant who knew and who could be persuaded to talk. And then... Julia grinned. What with one thing and another, she was just in the mood for a little rowdy gate crashing. Prince Harold strode casually down the dimly lit corridor, his hand resting lightly on the pommel of his sword. His footsteps echoed dully back from the oak-paneled walls. From time to time, as he drew closer to Lord Darius's quarters, guardsmen in full chainmail would reveal themselves, only to fall back upon recognizing Harold's grim features. The prince ignored them, but was quietly impressed by the thoroughness with which Darius protected himself. Obviously, he didn't intend for his little party to be interrupted, and by setting his guards in ones and twos, he avoided the attention that a large number of men would undoubtedly have drawn. As it was, Harold estimated that a full troop of guards stood between Lord Darius's chambers and the rest of the castle, acting as both an advance warning system and a strategically placed fighting force. Harold smiled slightly. The rebellion seemed well planned, if nothing else. He was quite looking forward to seeing who would be waiting for him at the party. Two tall, brawny guardsmen stood before Lord Darius's door. They wore featureless leather armor, with no colors to indicate allegiance. Their faces were impassive, but their eyes were cold and distrustful, and they held their swords at the ready as Harold approached them. They inclined their heads slightly as they recognized the prince, but made no move to step aside. Instead, the taller of the two guardsmen indicated with his sword a small table to his left. Harold moved forward and picked up a plain black domino mask from a pile on the table. He looked at the guardsmen and raised an eyebrow.
"With the compliments of Lord Darius, a masked ball in your honor, sire."
"Masks, how delightfully apt. But I don't think I'll bother myself."
"My apologies, sire. But the Lord Darius was most insistent. Nobody gets in unless they're wearing a mask."
"He'll make an exception in my case. Now stand aside."
"I take my orders from Lord Darius, just as you do, sire. Now put on your mask."
"And if I don't?"
"Then I'll put it on for you, sire."
"I see. That's a shame."
Harold hit him just below the breastbone with a straight finger jab, and all the color went out of the guard's face. The other guard went for his sword, but Harold stepped forward and brought a hidden dagger against the first guard's throat.
"Don't draw your weapon. One little move and your partner dies. And then you'll have to explain why you refused an order from the Prince of the Forest Kingdom. Now step back."
The guard took his hand from his blade. Harold smiled and turned to his captive.
"Now speak. Who do you take your orders from?"
"You, sire. Only you."
"Glad to hear it. Now, open the door for me, guardsman."
"Yes. Yes, sire."
Harold strode unhurriedly into Lord Darius's quarters. All conversation stopped as Harold entered the hall. Even the roaring flames in the huge open fireplace seemed muted by the sudden silence. Harold stopped just inside the doorway and looked about him. A vast sea of masks stared impassively back. Darius's hall wasn't all that large, as castle halls went, and the 200 or 300 people present filled it comfortably from wall to wall. The number was about right for a castle party, large enough to be impressive without being intimidating, but somehow, the masks made a difference. Simple black domino masks predominated, but at least half of Darius's guests had chosen to wear their own individual masks. Ornate and bizarre, gorgeous and grotesque, the masks watched Harold with a fixed intensity that came close to unnerving him. Their unmoving expressions, their exaggerated glees or sorrows or snarls, were so far from anything human as to be almost demonic. Directly before Harold, to his left, a white-faced Pierrot stood arm-in-arm with a horse-headed mummer. To Harold's right, a grinning Death leaned companionably on the shoulder of a shrieking Famine. A fish stared goggle-eyed, and a cat winked. And everywhere, simple black dominoes and painted faces and lorgnettes of beaten gold and silver. Harold stared at the masks, and the masks stared back. And then the sea of false faces suddenly parted as two figures came forward to meet him. A little of Harold's tension drained away as he recognized Lord Darius and the Lady Cecilia, and he moved his hand away from his sword hilt. Darius wore long, heavy robes of dusty gray, whose cut and style fought in vain to make him appear slimmer. His mask was a black silk domino. Cecilia wore an ornate ball gown of blue and silver, studded with semi-precious stones, which covered her completely from neck to ankle, without concealing any of her splendid figure. Her mask was a dainty lorgnette of beaten gold on a slender ivory handle. Darius bowed to Harold, and Cecilia curtsied. Behind them, the sea of masks also bowed and curtsied. Harold nodded briefly in return, and Darius acknowledged the crowd. Soon the sea of masks was suddenly just a gathering of party guests as they broke apart to talk or sample wines and sweetmeats and sugared fruits from the well-stocked buffet tables. Two servants moved forward and quietly closed the door behind Harold.
Welcome, sire. We've been expecting you for some time.
So Sir Blaise informs me.
Did you have any trouble getting here, sire?
None I couldn't handle.
Would you like me to get you a mask, Harold? I'm sure I can find just the thing to suit you.
Indeed. My guards were under strict orders to provide you with a mask.
They did try. I convinced them it was a bad idea. After all, I am here to be recognized, aren't I?
Of course, sire, of course.
Darius gestured quickly to a passing servant who stopped and presented Harold with a tray of drinks.
Thank you.
Ah, I'm glad you approve of the wine, Prince.
Why did you choose a masked ball, my lord Darius?
To be honest, sire, it's the only way I could persuade most of them to come. No doubt the masks give them a comforting sense of anonymity. There will be an unmasking later, once we've all had the opportunity to get to know one another a little better.
Mm-hmm. Then if you'll excuse me, my lord and lady, I'd better go and mingle with my fellow guests, hadn't I?
That is the purpose of this party, sire.
Harold smiled and moved away into the crowd of bobbing masks. Darius and Cecilia watched him go. Darius's right hand moved absently to the poisoned dagger concealed in his left sleeve.
Something's wrong.
Wrong? I don't see anything wrong, darling. The party's going splendidly. Everyone's here that should be.
No, it's Harold. The way he's been acting. He should be more, well, excited, damn it. The people in this room could put him on the throne if they choose to. To look at Harold, you'd think he didn't give a damn what they thought of him.
Dear Harold's never given much of a damn what anybody thinks. He doesn't have to. He's a prince.
You could be right.
He drank deeply from his wine glass, and on lowering it, was surprised to find it empty. He frowned and put the glass down on a nearby table. This was no time to be getting the worse for drink.
Come, my dear. Our guests are waiting, and if Harold won't charm them, we'll have to do it for him, damn the man.
You mean Gregory and I will have to charm them. You'll be too busy making political and business deals.
Of course. It's what I do best.
Yes.
They shared a smile and then moved away in different directions. Harold strolled slowly through the party, nodding politely to those he recognized and smiling coldly at those he didn't. He ignored all invitations to stop and talk and wandered back and forth across the hall until he was sure he'd seen everybody at least once. He finally ended up before the blazing open fire and stood with his back to it, quietly enjoying the warmth as it seeped slowly into his bones. Even the many thick stone walls of the castle couldn't seem to keep out the unnatural cold that had fallen across the forest. Bitter frosts blighted all the land, and every morning the snow lay more thickly on the castle battlements. Even the moat was beginning to ice over. Harold shrugged and sipped at his wine. Across the hall, Darius was glaring at him. Harold looked away. He wasn't ready to talk to anybody yet. Instead, he amused himself by watching the masked guests as they moved gracefully through the intricate measures of a dance, or gathered in hungry little groups around the buffet tables and scandalmongers. It seemed to Harold that for all the different kinds of mask, there was still a definite pecking order. High society had their own individual and highly stylized masks, each with its own subtle clues as to whose features lay concealed beneath. The lesser nobles wore the wilder and more bizarre masks, as though making up in originality for what they lacked in social standing. The traders and the military made do with the simple black domino masks that Lord Darius had provided. Directly opposite Harold, three men stood together, who wore no masks. Harold inclined his head slightly to them. The three Landsgraves nodded in acknowledgement, but made no move to approach him. Harold frowned and met their eyes in turn. Sir Blaise stared calmly back. Sir Gwillem bobbed his head and simpered nervously. And Sir Bedivere, despite himself, Harold shivered suddenly as he tried and failed to meet Sir Bedivere's cold, dark eyes. He knew now, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that if he had fought the Landsgrave that day in court, Sir Bedivere would have killed him easily. Harold glowered into his empty glass. He hadn't forgotten or forgiven the Landsgrave's insult to his father, but he vowed to himself that if it ever came to a fighting insult again, he'd have more sense than to challenge the Landsgrave to a duel. He'd just stab the man in the back, or put ground glass in his wine.
Welcome to the party.
Harold looked up to find himself face to face with a black-and-white harlequin mask. Its rosebud mouth smiled politely, but no humor showed in the pale blue eyes behind the mask.
I know that voice. Lord Vivian, isn't it? You're in charge of the castle's guards in the champion's absence.
Lord Vivian reached up and slowly and deliberately removed his mask, revealing a gaunt, raw-boned face so pale as to be almost colorless, topped with a thick mane of silver-gray hair. There was a calm and studied stillness to the face that suggested strength and determination, but the eyes were hard and unyielding, fanatic's eyes. His frame was lean and wiry rather than muscular, but there was a deadly grace to his few economical movements, and Harold noticed that Vivian's right hand never strayed far from his sword hilt.
I command the castle guards, now and always, my king.
I'm not king yet.
You will be. The champion isn't coming back. His body lies rotting in the dark wood. I speak for the guards now, and every man at arms in this castle follows my orders. With us at your side, no one will dare dispute your claim to the forest throne.
Indeed. But why should you support me rather than my father? You swore an oath of allegiance to him upon your life and your honor.
That was before the coming of the Darkwood. My oath to protect the land takes precedence over all other oaths. My loyalty is to the throne, not who sits on it. The forest is endangered, and your father is no longer capable of doing what must be done.
I take it you have something in mind for me to order as king.
Take the fight to the enemy, sire. Unite all the guards and men-at-arms into a single great army and send them forth against the darkness. Under my command, they will butcher the demons and drive them back.
And then?
And then my troops will set a wall of fire between us and the demons. A searing, bright-burning flame that will drive the foul creatures back into the darkness from which they came.
Even assuming such a tactic would work, hundreds of the outlying farms would be lost in the fire, thousands of peasants would die.
Regrettable, but necessary. If the dark wood isn't stopped, they'll die anyway. What does it matter if a few peasants die, if by their deaths they ensure the survival of the Forest Kingdom? I'm a soldier. My men and I take that same risk every time we go out into battle. Afterwards, we can always create more farms. And the lower classes breed like rabbits anyway.
Yes, quite. Still, I fear the barons would not take kindly to such widespread destruction of their lands.
My army would stand ready to support their king against any foe, no matter where such enemies may be found.
A comforting thought. I will think on your words, my Lord Vivian, and your most generous offer of support.
In return for my position as High Commander of the Guard, sire.
Of course, Lord Vivian, of course.
Vivian bowed slightly and replaced his harlequin mask. Faded blue eyes glittered coldly behind the black and white silk, and then Lord Vivian turned away and disappeared into the milling crowd. Harold frowned and shook his head as though to clear it. Vivian's presence at the party was hardly a surprise, but somehow Harold felt almost disappointed. He'd expected better of the man. He glowered into his empty glass. The wine was lousy, but Harold was damned if he could face this party entirely sober. He looked up to see a masked lord and lady heading uncertainly in his direction. Harold nodded politely to them. He'd better speak to somebody, or some of the guests might get nervous and leave. And that would never do. He bowed to the lord and to the lady, and they bowed and curtsied deeply in return. More masked figures came and went as the ball wore on. Harold met three lords he had suspected, two he hadn't, and a handful of local traders. It seemed the Darkwood was bad for business. The vast majority of those he met turned out to be courtiers, which was pretty much what he'd expected. On the one hand, courtiers tended to be conservative by nature, for as landowners or sheriffs of the king's land, they had much to lose and little to gain from any political change. But on the other hand, when all was said and done, most courtiers were lesser nobles who wanted very much to be greater nobles. And the only way to achieve that was to acquire more land or move to positions of greater influence within the court. which was why they came to Harold, hiding behind their masks of silk and leather and thinly beaten metal. The masks changed, but the story was always the same. Support in return for patronage. After a while, Harold stopped listening and just said yes to everyone. It saved time. Cecilia and Gregory paraded arm in arm the length of the hall and back again, smiling and chatting and making sure that everyone's wine glass was full to the brim. With her beauty and his firm, masculine good looks, they made a handsome couple, bold and bright. Cecilia was at her sparkling best, her malicious little quips and barbed comments reducing even the most stern-faced to indulgent smiles and open laughter. While not the most diplomatic of men, Gregory could be charming when he put his mind to it, and with Cecilia at his side to inspire him, the young guardsman strolled amiably among the uncertain, radiating confidence. Bluff and hearty, his sure manner and calm good humor steadied quavering nerves and spread a sense of purpose among the wavering. There were few glances at Cecilia's arm linked through his. Everyone knew, or at least suspected. There were a few sidelong glances in Darius's direction, but nobody said anything. Since Darius knew and apparently didn't object, the subject was closed, at least in public. Among the courtiers, eyes met and shoulders shrugged. Politics made for strange bedfellows, sometimes literally. Darius missed none of this as he circulated among his guests. Fools. He knew well enough that where reason couldn't sway a man, charm often would. Possessing but little charm himself, Darius needed someone else to front for him on occasion. Someone with good looks, an easy manner, and not enough brains to double-cross his master. Gregory might have been tailor-made for the position. It helped that Cecilia liked him. But then Cecilia wasn't exactly brilliant either. Darius looked around him. At least Harold had finally condescended to talk to his fellow guests, even if he did seem to be attracting mainly the lesser nobles of no real influence or importance. It was about time Harold started pulling his weight and getting his noble hands dirty. Darius thought of the hard bargaining he'd just been through to get the two leading forest grain merchants on his side, and smiled grimly. It wasn't just politics and force of arms that made a rebellion, as Harold and the barons would find out to their cost. In return for certain future concessions, Darius now owned all the stocks of grain remaining in the forest land. Not so much as one cartload would leave the carefully hidden silos without his permission. The Landsgraves might think they owned him, but the barons would soon learn better when they had to come cap in hand to the Lord Darius for grain to feed their troops.
Ah, Lord Darius.
Darius composed his face to calm inscrutability as Sir Blaise approached him. Darius looked surreptitiously about for Gwillem and Bedivere, but there was no sign of them.
Ah, Sir Blaise, my dear fellow. I trust you are enjoying my hospitality.
Your wine's lousy and the company stinks. Still, when you're dealing with traitors, you learn to ignore things that would normally sicken you. I take it you've noticed Harold's growing popularity? Courtiers who'd normally run a mile to avoid him are fighting each other for the chance to shake his hand in public.
Dear Harold does seem to be doing rather well. Possibly because he's been a little overgenerous in his offers of patronage. Still, let him promise what he likes. It keeps the courtiers happy. And we can always put things right later.
You mean the barons will put things right, Darius?
Of course, Sir Blaise, but of course.
Something's worrying your guests. Something that's got them so scared they daren't even discuss it here. Have you any idea what's gotten into them?
The katana. They don't believe it's been stolen any more than you or I do. No, my dear Blaise, they are afraid that John and his pet astrologer now have the Sword of Compulsion, and are planning to use it against them, setting gears after gears upon them until they're nothing more than slaves with no will of their own.
It's possible, I suppose. How about you? Do you think John has the katana?
What does it matter? If he has, there's nothing we can do about it. If he hasn't, then he's defenseless against us. Besides, I've no doubt the sword's powers have been greatly exaggerated over the years. All magic fades in time.
Legend has it that the katana derives its powers from the demon prince himself. If that's so, then the katana is once again one of the deadliest weapons ever to be wielded in the land. If by some chance the king really hasn't got it, we'd better find out who has, and quickly. John might hesitate to use the katana, There are a great many others who wouldn't.
That's a problem for another day, Sir Blaze. In the meantime, the longer the katana stays missing, the better. Its main value to us is as a weapon with which to isolate the king from the court. The more scared they are of the king, the more likely they are to side with us.
Oh, it won't be that easy, Darius. It's not enough for these sheep to be scared. They have to be pushed into action. And to do that, we have to be able to offer them some kind of protection against both the katana and the royal guard.
You really think there'll be a problem with Lord Vivian as High Commander of the Guard?
The Royal Guard will still support King John. They're loyal to the king himself, almost fanatically so. The other guardsmen might or might not obey Lord Vivian rather than the king. More likely, they'd hang back and wait to see which way the wind blows. No, my dear Darius, we need a weapon strong enough to ensure our safety against all attacks, no matter which quarter they might come from. Luckily, there are such weapons available to us, now that the armory has been reopened.
You're talking about stealing the infernal devices.
Exactly.
The katana's bad enough, Blaze. I don't think I trust any man who wielded one of those damned blades. Those swords are evil.
It's a little late to be getting particular, Darius. Look around you. Out of all the castle, barely 300 people have turned out to support us openly. There should have been 5 times that number. Even with all that's happened, most of the court are still loyal to the king. Or, at least, they're more frightened of his wrath than they are of ours. We're going to need every weapon we can lay our hands on, and that includes the infernal devices. It's too late to get soft now, Darius.
Very well, Sir Blaze. But I'll not wield one of those blades. Not for the throne itself and all the forest land.
I never intended that you should.
Darius stared at him a moment, and then bowed formally and walked away. Sir Gwillem and Sir Bedivere came over to join Sir Blaze.
The noble Lord Darius doesn't seem too happy, Blaze. I do hope he isn't going to be a problem.
He won't be, Gwillem.
Sir Blaze might have to work with Gwillem, but he didn't have to like him. Sir Gwillem was such a nasty little man when all was said and done. If he wasn't so necessary to the Baron's plans... Blaze winced as Gwillem's gaze wandered over the more comely of the ladies present, blatantly undressing them with his eyes.
Try to keep your gaze polite, dammit. We're supposed to be persuading these people to our cause, not providing jealous husbands with grounds for duel.
Sir Gwillem's round, bland features were flushed, and his smile was ugly.
Now, Blaze, we all have our preferences. In return for my services, the Barons promised me I could have anything I wanted. Anything or anyone. Since I've been here at the castle, I've seen the most delightful creature, such a sweet young thing. I want her, and I am going to have her. I'm sure she'll grow very fond of me, eventually.
Sir Blaze looked away. What little he'd heard of Gwillem's private life had been enough to turn his stomach. It seemed the Landsgrave liked a little blood with his pleasures, and sometimes more than a little. Gwillem stared hungrily at a tall and slender masked lady as she and her husband walked by on the way to the banquet table. She caught his eye, shuddered, and looked away quickly. Gwillem licked his lips, and the husband glared at him.
Damn you! I told you!
I don't take orders from you!
He turned suddenly to face Blaze, a vicious little skinning knife in his hand. His mouth trembled petulantly, and his eyes were very bright.
I'm a blade master, and don't you forget it! Without me, you'll never control the infernal devices. And without them, your precious rebellion hasn't a hope in hell of succeeding. You need me, Blaze. I don't need you. My private life is none of your damned business. No one tells me what to do. Not you, or the Barons, or...
Bedivere's hand was suddenly around his throat.
You do anything to upset our plans, and I'll hurt you, little man. I'll hurt you so badly, you'll never walk straight again. Do you understand? Good. Afterwards, you can do whatever you like, you revolting little man. But not yet. Until Harold is securely on his throne and safely under our control, you don't do one damn thing that might jeopardize our mission. Is that clear?
Gwillem nodded quickly, and Bedivere turned away to stare calmly out over the milling throng. The crimson glare had already faded from his eyes, but the madness remained, as it always did. Blaze shook his head slowly as Gwillem awkwardly made his knife disappear. Not for the first time, Blaze wondered how he'd come to this, plotting treason against his king with a berserker and a pervert. It was all John's fault for being a weak king. If he'd been stronger, more capable, done what was so obviously needed, none of this would have been necessary.
You should never have gone after the katana, John. Anything else, and we might still have struck a deal. But once you'd opened the armory, there was nothing more I could do for you. Harold would do better. He understood the realities of power. A strong king on the forest throne, working with the barons, not against them, that was what was needed. And then the Darkwood would be driven back, the demons destroyed, and everything would be the way it used to be. Everything. Damn you, John. Damn you for making me a traitor.
Cecilia glided confidently through the loudly chattering crowd, making bright conversation with people she couldn't stand, and smiling till her jaws ached. The air was growing dull and stuffy, despite the hall's many air vents, and the constant roar of massed voices grated on Cecilia's nerves till she thought she'd scream. Finally, she decided enough was enough, and taking Gregory firmly by the arm, she forcibly led him off to the punch bowl in search of a little peace and a very large drink.
How many more do we have to talk to?
As many as it takes. We can't afford to let anyone leave if he isn't 100% convinced that it's in his best interest to side with us.
You know, Gregory, I can remember when I could dance and sing and drink all through the evening and on into the early hours of the morning. Sleep for 4 hours and still wake up bright-eyed and cheerful, ready to do it all again. Look at me now. I've only been here a few hours, and already I'm out on my feet. I'm getting too old for this.
Nonsense.
I am. I'm 41. I've got a double chin, and that's not the only thing that's beginning to sag. Have you seen my...
Yes. Yes, I have. And you're talking rubbish. You're as young and lovely now as you've always been. I should know.
Dear Gregory, you say the nicest things. I suppose that's why I keep you around.
Oh, not the only reason, surely.
Later, dear, later. We have work to do.
Yes, of course. Well, I'll be waiting.
Gregory?
M'lady?
Why do you stay with me? You know I'll never divorce Darius.
Yes, I know.
Do you love me?
Perhaps. Oh, what difference does it make as long as we're having a good time together? Worry about tomorrow when it comes. For now, we have each other. And I've never been happier. Never.
Cecilia reached up, and taking his ears in her tiny hand, she pulled his head down to hers and kissed him tenderly.
Thank you, my dear. Now, do me a favor and go and talk to those ghastly people for a while. I'm going to sit here and have a headache until I get my stamina back. Pardon me.
Gregory nodded amiably and strode manfully off into the milling crowd.
Hello, my dear.
Oh, hello, Darius.
How are we doing?
Not too bad. Care for a drink?
No, thank you. I'm the clear head.
Suit yourself. Don't worry, Darius. Most of them are with us. The rest just need to be talked into doing what they want to do anyway.
Let me know at once if anyone makes a move to leave.
Of course. I take it you have your poisoned dagger handy?
Of course. And the guards have their orders. No one gets out of here unless I vouch for them. We've come too far to risk being betrayed now. All our heads would roll.
We'll be wanting out of Rhine soon. When do we start the unmasking?
Soon, my dear, soon. It's not something we can rush. It's the first real sign of trust, the first commitment to our cause. When I think they're ready, I'll give you the signal, and we'll both unmask. And once we've broken the ice, the rest will follow. My hope.
What if they don't? What if we haven't convinced them?
We must. If we don't, we'll be the ones who won't leave here alive.
Serves that stupid guard right. No damn guardsman is going to tell me which passageways I can and can't use. He'll regret taking that tone with me as soon as he wakes up. Oh, Badine! Badine, what are you doing here?
Dying of thirst, mainly, Princess. 3 hours I've been on duty, and not so much as a cup of mulled ale to warm me bones.
Oh, it's a hard life in the guards. What exactly are you guarding?
Oh, just some party. Private get-together for some of Lord Darius's friends. I didn't know you'd been invited, Princess. I wouldn't have thought you were the type.
I wasn't, and I'm not. I'm just going to gatecrash the party to annoy Harold.
Prince Harold? I don't think he's in there. Certainly he hasn't passed by me.
Oh.
Julia frowned. She was sure she'd followed the servant's directions exactly. The castle must be up to its old tricks again.
Why are you still here, Badine? With all those jewels you picked up in the counting house, you could have retired from the guards and bought yourself a tavern.
That's what I thought. Unfortunately, the king made me hand over everything I'd found to the seneschal.
Not everything, surely.
Everything, Princess. Right down to the last gold coin. Makes you weep, don't it? All those jewels. I mean, it wasn't as if the king would have missed a few, after all. If it hadn't been for you and me, he'd never have seen any of them again. Well, I've learned my lesson. You can't trust the aristocracy. Not even your own king.
But didn't you at least get a reward for helping rediscover the South Wing?
Just doing my job, Princess. That's what they pay me 2 silver ducats a week for.
That's disgusting. I think I'll have a word with the king about this.
I wasn't aware you had any pull with him.
Well, when you get right down to it, I don't. But it's worth a try.
Sure. Thanks anyway, Princess.
I'll tell you what I can do. I can break into Darius's party and bring you back a drink. How's that?
Ah, it's a nice thought, Princess. But if you haven't got an invitation, I can't let you pass.
Oh, come on, Badine. You can let me sneak past. I won't tell anyone.
I'm in enough trouble as 'tis, Princess. I don't need any more. Thanks for the offer, but no.
Badine.
Julia?
Julia spun round to find King John standing at the corridor intersection, staring grimly at Badine. Behind the king, filling the corridor from wall to wall, stood a full company of guardsmen, each man wearing the distinctive scarlet and gold markings of the royal guard.
Stand aside unless you want to get blood on your clothes.
Prince Harold wandered over to the punch bowl and refilled his glass. So far, the punch was the only thing that made this party bearable. He sat on the edge of the buffet table and stared sardonically about him, one leg idly swinging. Now that Darius and Cecilia had ostentatiously removed their masks, others were following suit. Mask after mask had fallen away as the revelers gained in confidence. But the faces revealed were flushed with anxiety and too much wine, and their laughter had been forced and harsh. The crowd continued their revelry, but Harold knew just how strained it had become. Treason didn't come easy at the best of times. He stretched tiredly and wondered how much longer the party would last. He'd had his fill of the courtiers and businessmen and lords and ladies and all their many promises of what they'd do for him when he became king. And, of course, what they expected from him in return. Harold grinned suddenly. He had a few surprises in store for them.
Prince Harold, if we might speak with you a moment.
Harold looked up at the three Landsgraves standing before him and nodded curtly.
Of course, Sir Blaise. After all, this is your party as much as mine. What can I do for you?
We need your decision. And I'm afraid we must insist on knowing it now.
Harold surged to his feet in one smooth motion and stood towering over the Landsgrave, his hand resting on the pommel of his sword.
You insist to me again, my noble Landsgrave, and I'll cut your heart out.
Gwillem flushed pinkly, and Blaise stepped quickly forward to stand between him and the prince.
I'm sure Sir Gwillem meant no offense, sire. It's just that we don't have much time. The unmasking has finally begun, and soon the party will be drawing to its close. You must understand that we are all at risk the longer we stay here. If by some chance we were to be discovered together, it might prove a trifle awkward to explain.
You do have a talent for understatement, Sir Blaise.
Quite. We need an answer, Prince Harold, and we need it now. Are you with us or not?
I need more time to think about it.
Your time just ran out. What's there to think about? If you're not with us, you're against us. And if you're against us...
Then what? Then what, Sir Berserker?
A crimson glare came and went in the giant Landsgrave's eyes. But when he spoke, his voice was cold and emotionless.
If you're not with us, Prince Harald, we'll just find someone else and make him king.
Like who? Rupert's not coming back, and there's no one here with any claim to the throne. For better or for worse, I'm the last of the Forest Kings. The line ends with me.
Precisely. So what's to stop us establishing a new line of kings?
You'd have to kill me first.
That's right.
There's no need for all this talk of killing. The Barons would much rather have someone they can trust on the Forest Throne. Someone they know they can work with. They want you, Prince Harald. Everyone in this hall wants you as their king. All you have to do is say yes.
Supposing I did agree, just for the sake of argument, what do you get out of it? I mean, you three, personally. What exactly have the Barons promised you? Money, power, or what?
Blaze thought furiously as he stared impassively at the prince. Something was happening here, and he wasn't sure what. Harald seemed different somehow. His usual mask of flippancy thrown aside, his voice cold and unyielding. He was far too self-assured for Blaze's liking, and his steady gaze seemed almost mocking, as though he knew something the Landsgraves didn't. Blaze scowled. For the time being, he'd play Harald's game, but later, there would be a reckoning.
We serve the Barons. That is our duty and our privilege. No doubt we'll all be well rewarded for our part in this, but our loyalty lies with gold and silver and copper.
Bull! No one's listening, my dear Landsgrave. No one can overhear us. For once in your life, forget diplomacy and tell me the truth. You know what I stand to get out of this deal, but if we're to work together, I want to know where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing while I sit on the Forest Throne. In other words, I want to know what's in it for you, my noble Landsgraves.
I speak for gold, Prince Harald, as I have always done. In return for my part in this rebellion, and for my many past services, the Baron has most graciously named me as his successor. A marriage has been arranged between myself and the Baron's eldest daughter. A most charming young lady. Perhaps you remember her? She was most upset when you broke off your engagement to her in order to marry the Princess Julia. Her father was even more upset. Still, at least now the Baron has a son-in-law he knows he can trust. When he dies, I will be Baron Oakshaft. I have no wish to take over a domain crippled by debt and overrun by darkness just because the forest has a weak king. With you on the throne, and the Barons to guide you, the forest land will grow strong again, and with it, Oakshaft Domain. That's what's in it for me, Prince Harald.
See? That wasn't so hard. Sir Bedivere?
I shall serve as your champion, sire. It is all I want. It is all I have ever wanted. Your enemies shall fall before me, and I will bring you their heads to set upon your gates. I shall be your right hand, dealing out death and destruction, blood and terror to any who dare oppose you. I will be your champion, sire, and all who live will fear your justice.
There was an unfocused, faraway look to his eyes, and Harald shivered suddenly. He'd always known Bedivere was a killer, but now he stared into the man's eyes and saw a bloody madness staring back. There was something in the giant Landsgrave that called for murder and sudden death and would never be satisfied. Harald swore silently to himself that come what may, Sir Bedivere would have to die.
And you, Sir Gwillem?
The Barons promised me I could have anything I wanted, and I've seen what I want. She's tall and graceful and very beautiful, and she's going to be mine. She's too proud to have anything to do with me now, but she'll come to heel quickly enough once I've broken her spirit. They always do.
Harald turned away in disgust, pitying whichever poor woman the Landsgrave had set his mind on.
Lovely girl. Julia's such a lovely girl.
Badine? Your Majesty? What the hell is going on?
Things you wouldn't understand, Julia.
Behind the king, several of the royal guard raised their swords, and Julia could see fresh blood on the blades.
Oh, it's quite simple. Treason. And this man is a part of it, aren't you, Badim?
I'm afraid I can't let you pass, sire. I have my orders.
Will you cut it out, Badim? Let them through. They're serious.
So am I.
Candlelight shimmered on Badim's sword as he hefted it, and the nearest of the royal guard stirred restlessly.
I trusted you, Badim. You taught my son swordsmanship. You fought beside me in the border campaigns, and now you betray me. Put down your sword, Badim. At least that way you'll live to stand trial.
That's not much of a choice.
You can't fight a whole company of guards. Come on, Badim, do as he says. If you don't, they'll kill you.
You know, Julia, I think you may well be right.
Badim twisted Julia's arm up behind her back and put his sword against her throat.
Stop! One more step and she dies!
Stay where you are! Badim, let's talk about this. You know how this is going.
That's
to...
That's far enough.
Badim's arm trembled slightly, and Julia felt her skin part under the blade's keen edge. Blood trickled down her neck to stain the high collar of her tunic. Julia tried to breathe as lightly as possible.
Let her go.
I don't think so. She's my way out of here. I'm going to back down this corridor, and you're going to let me do it. Because if you don't, you're going to have to invite Princess Julia's father to a funeral.
Julia tried to ease the strain on her twisted arm, but Badim immediately hauled it back into place.
Keep still, Princess. I don't want to hurt you, but I will if I have to.
King John gestured for his guardsmen to stand steady and glared at Badim.
All right, traitor, what do you want?
First of all, everybody puts their swords on the ground. Then Julia and I are going for a little walk. I have some people to warn. And sire, if I see anyone following me, I'll cut this young lady's throat from ear to ear. You understand?
Badim?
Yes, Julia?
Badim's nose broke from the blow, and his grip loosened ever so slightly. Julia swung her head back again. Julia dodged Badim's blind slash and drew her sword. Badim shook his head to clear it and cut at her again. She beat aside his blade and lunged forward without missing a beat. For a moment, the tableau held. Julia in full lunge, Badim staring down at the sword piercing his chest.
Julia!
Yes?
I forgot. What a good fighter you are. Damn.
Would you really have killed me?
I don't know. Probably.
Why? Why did you betray the king?
The barons paid me better.
Julia, come away from him. It's over now. One of my guards will see you safely back to your chambers.
It isn't over yet. I want to meet the men who bought my friend.
You don't have to do this. This isn't really your business.
Julia put her hand to her throat and showed King John the blood on her fingers.
Isn't it?
Very well, then. But don't get in our way. This isn't going to be pretty.
Treachery never is.
The king signaled to his guards, and he and his party moved purposefully down the corridor, heading deeper into the east wing. Again and again, the king's men discovered others guarding the corridors, but none of them put up a fight. Faced with a full company of the royal guard, they all surrendered. A few turned to run, and they were shown no mercy.
You two, drop your weapons now.
Forgive us, my liege.
We'll deal with that later. Drop your weapons, both of you. Tie them up. Now, let's put an end to this.
This is your king. Open this door at once!
Chaos filled the hall as the revelers ran frantically back and forth, shouting and screaming and drawing swords and daggers. Some clapped their masks to their faces again as though the flimsy disguises could still somehow protect them with anonymity. Tables were overturned as the crowd surged this way and that. Those who fell in the crush were trampled blindly underfoot. Lord Darius saw his very life fall before his eyes. Cecilia clutched at his arm, her face pinched and white with shock. but Darius didn't even know she was there. Gregory fought his way through the milling crowd to join her, but the sheer press of bodies slowed his progress to a crawl. The three Landsgraves stared at each other.
The bookcase in Darius' study. We'll use the secret passage to escape, and then...
And then what? We've been betrayed, Blaze. The king will have us all executed.
He's got to catch us first. Now pull yourself together. You're supposed to be a blade master, dammit. If need be, you should be able to fight your way out of here, unless you've been exaggerating your abilities all this time. Now calm down and think. That door is solid oak and bolted top and bottom. It'll take the king's men a good hour and more to cut their way through, and by then we'll be long gone.
Wait. Hold on a second. I just realized...
All we have to do is get to the stables, and we can be on our way back to Oakshaft Domain before the king even knows we've left the castle. Once we're safely inside my master's keep, no one can touch us.
Wait! Where's Harold?
The three Landsgraves looked quickly about them, but Harold had disappeared. And then they all saw him at the main door, pulling back the door's bolts. King John nodded calmly to his son as he walked slowly into the hall, his company of guards fanning out around him. Harold raised an eyebrow when he spotted Julia among the guards, but shook his head when she started to say something to him. Julia nodded understandingly. There'd be time for explanations later. The king moved slowly forward into the hall, and the silent conspirators fell back before him, until only Darius, Cecilia, and Gregory remained to face him. Darius stared blankly at Harold, who leaned against the door jamb and shook his head sadly.
Sorry, Darius. You can't trust anyone these days.
The conspirators stared at the prince speechlessly. Darius stepped forward, his mouth working.
Why? Why? We would have made you king!
If you'd betray one king, no doubt you'd betray another if it suited you. Did you think I was blind, Darius? You threatened my father. You threatened me. Your schemes would have endangered the whole forest land. I know my duty to the land, Darius. It's more important than you or I will ever be. Did you really think I'd give it into your keeping? You've never cared for anyone but yourself in your whole damn life.
Enough, Harold. You've done well. Are there any other exits from this hall?
Just the one, Father. The door in the far right-hand corner. It leads to Darius's private chambers. They can't escape that way. It's a dead end.
Darius spun round to face his fellow conspirators.
Don't just stand there, damn you! We outnumber the guards 3-1! Kill the king, and the land is ours! Kill the king, or we'll all face the headsman!
The conspirators stared at Darius, and then at the king.
Put down your swords. Those who surrender to me now will be granted exile. I give you my word on it.
You can't be considering it! Fight, damn you! We can still win!
No, Darius. It's over. Better an honorable exile than a traitor's death.
Following Lord Vivian's example, the businessmen and the courtiers and the lords and ladies dropped their swords and daggers. Darius stared at them unbelievingly, his eyes wild and desperate. Gregory moved in close beside Cecilia, his sword at the ready.
Well, Harold, I must admit I knew you were a clever man, but your talent for intrigue and double-dealing exceeds even my own.
I think I'll decide to take that as a compliment, Darius.
But there's one little thing you haven't taken into consideration, I'm afraid.
Really? What's that?
Well, it's really very simple. You see...
Darius! Wait for me!
Cecilia, my love!
After them! Now!